21 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on Northern Community Radio. We are continuing our Minnesota Governor candidate conversations today on KEXE, KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton with our DFL commentator, Colleen Nardone. Today, we welcome Representative Matt Dean. He's Republican candidate for governor in 2018. He served in Minnesota's House of Representatives since 2005. He's been the majority leader from 2011 to 2013. He's also been chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. Representative Matt Dean joins us now. Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Well, let's start off with telling us about your background and your experience. Why is now the time that you want to run for Minnesota governor?
Well, I'm a fifth generation Minnesota. I love our state. I was born on the Iron Range, and I grew up on Rice Street on the east side of St. Paul. And it's actually kind of the north-south street that just starts out at the Capitol and goes all the way up north to about 5 miles. And when I was a little kid, I was growing up, my dad ran a bar on Rice Street, and he was a fourth-generation bar owner. And I never thought when I was a little kid helping out around my dad's bar that I would be working at the other end of Rice Street, which is where I work now at the Capitol. But there's a lot more common sense around the bar at the north end of Rice Street than there is in the legislature at the south end. And I think we need a lot more common sense, and we need to pull the state in the right direction. And I think we need some practical experience, and I've done that, have an experience of doing that in the legislature with measurable results and with honesty, working with people who don't necessarily agree with you. You got to get to deliverable results at the end of the day, and I have a reputation for doing that. And I've worked with Governor Dayton over the past several cycles on our budget, and both as majority leader and as leader in the health and human services area. And I think we really do need leadership that after an election, you can put it behind you. After a session, you can put it behind you. Take your Republican or Democrat jersey off and put your Minnesota jersey on and do the best you can for the state. People expect that from us, and right now they're not getting that from our leaders.
This is Colleen, Matt, and I want to welcome you to the program, too. And we have seen often that governors had one issue that sort of became identified with them. It might be tax reform, it might be education, as in the case of Governor Dayton. It can be any number of things. Do you think you would have one thing that people would look back on and say, well, that was when Governor Dean was here? So.
Yes. I think in the area of health care, that's the area that I have focused on the most as Health and Human Services Chair. And it's also really the reason that I decided to run for governor was in working through the legislature. I got a call from a guy named Charlie Dunker who shared his story with me and his wife about trying to get care after Obamacare and trying to get the help and the services and reconnect with the doctors and the hospitals that they had grown up with. And they were completely shut out from it and separated from it. And Gail was the same age as my wife, and there was a real personal kind of a connection to this story. And because of what has happened to healthcare in the last several years, the Dunkers weren't able to get the care that they needed. And instead of fighting, first, Gail couldn't diagnose the fact that she had cancer. It was several months before she could go in. They had to borrow money to get the tests to even tell them what was wrong with her. And by the time that they found out, it was too late. And while Gail should have been fighting her cancer, she was fighting the state government to try to get help. And the fact remains that she was guilty of nothing but being a middle-class person, who was the victim of a system that wasn't working right. She paid every bill she ever had. She filled out every form. She paid every dime of taxes. She lived in Minnesota her whole life. And that shouldn't happen to anybody. And it's happening to people in all 87 counties, and it shouldn't happen. So we are, Minnesota has the best health care, not just in the country, but in the world. It has always been ranked number one in health care for every year of my life. In quality, we've got some of the lowest numbers of uninsured. We've got a program for people with pre-existing conditions. We've had a history of being able to insure your kids through 25. So everything that people liked about Obamacare, we were already doing in Minnesota. And now, if in greater Minnesota, you had five choices for an individual health care plan, now you have one, and the costs went up, not down. And so that's really what we need to do, is reconnect Minnesotans with the doctors, hospitals, clinics, nurses that make our health care great. And right now that we still have time, but we don't have much time left. And if I could do one thing, that's what I would do.
We are talking to Representative Matt Dean. He's a Republican candidate for Minnesota governor in 2018. Besides health care, what do you think some of the biggest challenges our state faces? What issues stand out to you?
Sure. If you look back 100 years ago, when we built our Capitol, we're just a little over 100 years old, and we've just restored it. When we built our Capitol, we really built it to celebrate the new wealth of our state. We kind of arrived on the scene, and we were very proud. And all of the wealth of our state at that time came from harvesting stuff, whether that's timber, minerals, or agriculture, making stuff, and healing people. And oddly enough, or ironically enough, today all of the wealth in the state of Minnesota comes from harvesting stuff, making stuff, and healing people. And if you talk to people in those areas, in medicine, in healthcare, in manufacturing, or in agriculture, timber, or mining, what you hear is that Minnesota is really out to get you. It's harder to do business here than it is to do business anywhere else. And for middle-class families, it's harder to make a living here than it is elsewhere, because it just seems like the state is leaning against those industries that create wealth. And so middle-class families are having a harder and harder time. And I was up on the Iron Range about a month ago, and there was a rally and a hearing in Virginia, Minnesota. And there was a woman up there, and her grandma, her daughter was making $72,000 a year working for the mines. And she lost her job with benefits. She has two little kids. And that job has been replaced with a $19,000 a year annual income from two service sector jobs that don't have benefits. So she's going to have to move with those two little grandkids out of their hometown. But that middle class heritage that Minnesota has comes from these sectors, and we have to not try to run them out of business, but we have to actually rebuild them in order to rebuild middle-class Minnesota, and to make Minnesota open for business again. We have to be really practical. We have to obey the laws of gravity, and we have to, in other words, we have to have some common sense back to our economy and really reopen Minnesota for business again.
Can you give us an example of how you would ensure that even if these businesses were making lots of money, that it would filter down to the employees?
Well, I think if you go up to anywhere between Duluth and International Falls, and you said, do you think it would be a good idea for us to invest in mining? People would say yes, because they remember the industries that, and also the services that are impacted when you have a strong mining economy. And you just can't replace, you know, a $70,000 or $80,000 a year mining job with a $12 an hour part-time, 20-hour a week retail position at a fat tire bike rental shop, or an espresso cafe, those jobs aren't equal. They might be equal to Paul Krugman, who writes for the New York Times, who says that, well, that's just the natural progression of things to move from heavy industry to service industry. But if you can't support a family on it, that doesn't work for our state. And it does actually filter down, because if you are if you're there 12 months a year and you're making $70,000 or $80,000 a year, you can actually have mom or dad stay home when the kids are little. You can support piano lessons, and you can buy braces for teeth, and you can purchase private health insurance, and you can do a lot of things that we should be able to do when you're working full-time at a good job with benefits and dignity in our state. And that, I think, people just aren't getting right now for whatever reason. And we really need to refocus on, you know, rebuilding middle-class jobs in greater Minnesota to make, you know, the Donald Trump said, you know, he's going to make America great again. You know, we need to focus on a greater Minnesota, which is, for us, if you don't have jobs that can support middle-class families, then, you know, what do we have for greater Minnesota? So we absolutely have to do that.
What do you think that the governor's role is in the Minnesota legislature?
The governor's role is very, very important, and who the governor is a bigger deal than which party they're from. You know, we've had governors from Republican, Democrat, and Independent in the last few years in Minnesota, and we tend to switch around because Minnesotans, I think, like balance. But the major thing with the governor in particular is the legislature really looks to the governor for leadership in direction for which way the state is going. And the governor is a very important leader in Minnesota relative to other states, because we're a strong governor state. The governor has much more power in Minnesota than in other states. And also, I think the state really does look to the governor to say, which way are we going? What is our direction right now? And one that I think needs to be less partisan in order to chart a better course and to really lead the state in a direction. In order to do that, you have to walk away from an election, dust yourself off, and move forward. You can't look back and relitigate the last election, and you can't relitigate the last legislative session like is happening currently. You know, the governor walked away from the last session and then decided that he didn't like the deals that he had made with the legislative leaders. So he just line item vetoed or eliminated funding for the legislature. Now, that's something I'm sure ran through the mind of every governor that could do that, because I'm sure people get mad and they wish that they didn't have to deal with people who don't agree with them all the time. But that's not how it works. You know, we've got three branches of government, and you can't take out a chainsaw and cut one of them off and then, you know, hope to lead those same people into, you know, the next year. And so people see that and they think, what in the heck is going on down there? You know, why can't you knuckleheads seem to figure this out, that it's not about you, it's about us, and you work for us, and, you know, knock that crap off. That's basically what I've heard when I'm traveling around the state. After the fair, I had a great time at the Minnesota State Fair. I was there all 12 days, met thousands of folks, and then kicked off 87 counties in 87 days, and I've been traveling around the state and learning as much as I possibly can from people all over our great state. And I'll tell you, they are fed up with that, and particularly from what they see from the governor. If you watch the news tonight, you'll see that that's going to be on the docket again, is that we're the legislative leaders and the governor are sent to couples counseling to try to figure out, you know, how to get past the fact that the governor wants to defund the legislature.
Well, while we're talking about process, at the legislature. I think observers of the process have been a little bit disappointed at the chaotic endings that seem to be increasing over the last decade or so. And I'm wondering, as governor, do you think that you would be able to impact more openness in the legislature, where there would be more public hearings near the end so we wouldn't all be surprised by what's in the bills? And we'd also like it if you could address the issue of constitutionality in terms of combining policy and budget bills to get policy items through that couldn't pass on their own.
Sure. I think the governor needs to be a strong leader in what the governor is willing to sign or not sign. So the worst thing that you can do is surprise people at the end. If you veto a bill because you disagree with it, that shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone at the end of the session, because that doesn't really help the state if people don't know what you're going to veto. You need to just be really overly blunt and clear about that ahead of time so that you don't surprise people or cause a need for a special session or derail the government. In terms of the legislative process, I think individual legislators need to, number one, become better aware of what is in the bills that they're pushing through the legislature. And House rules actually do matter. And if you recently in the House, what we have done is we've moved away from the days when any member could offer any amendment on any bill. And now you have to pre-file it, and it has to kind of be blessed by the legislative leaders and by lobbyists and lots of other folks, get a chance to look at it and combat it ahead of time. And there's no surprising the legislature by that. What that allows is lazy legislators who don't have to read bills anymore, and they can just rely on the staff to tell them whether or not they should vote for something. And we've really lost a lot. It sounds like kind of maybe a minor thing, but if you're a legislator and you represent Aiken County and there's an amendment on the floor that would impact Aiken County, and you have to be on your feet and be able to react to it very quickly, you have to know what's in that underlying bill to know whether or not that's good or bad for Aiken County and be able to vote accordingly. And with that gone, legislators can kind of be on autopilot. So that would be one major change, would be to allow any legislator to offer any amendment. I think that's a rule change that we should go back to. It's a heritage for Minnesota. Number two, I think you need to set and obey realistic timelines for putting bills through. And they need to be smaller. The bills need to be smaller, and they need to get done earlier. And when you do that, you're going to make less mistakes. If you have a bill that comes as an amendment, as it did in the last session, at 2:30 in the morning with, thousands of pages of bills getting printed with very few people being able to read them or break them down, that's when stuff gets put in bills, as it did this last session and the session before, that nobody agreed to publicly. You have things that just get slipped in that are, pushed through at the last minute by staff or agencies or leaders that no one else agrees to. And you also get bills that make a lot of mistakes. Government is very complicated, and all these agencies work together. And when you push things through at the last minute, you get a lot of errors. Then you have to come back and correct. It wastes money, and it ends up causing trouble for the end user. If you look at, and what that might mean is that when you're trying to get your tabs renewed, or you're trying to deal with the government in another way, you say, well, how can this be so messed up? A lot of that, I think, can be traced back to process that we need to figure things out in a little bit more of an orderly manner. And it doesn't mean that you have to be in session 12 months a year, but it does mean that you have to break things down into subject areas, have clean hearings so that people know what's in the bill, not just the legislators, but the people who the bills affect, and move them through on time. You can't just hide out until the last minute and then use that chaos that comes at the last minute in order to advance your agenda. People are really tired of that.
That is Representative Matt Dean. He's a Republican candidate for Minnesota governor in 2018. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate the time. Happy to come back anytime. I'll be in your area soon if I haven't been there already.
All right.
Look forward to seeing folks out on the trail.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot. If you want to catch up on all the Making Sausage Governor candidate interviews we've done, you can go to our website, kexe.org. And next week, Colleen, we're talking with St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman, who's a Democratic candidate for governor in 2018.
Happy days are here again.